It's time to talk about college sports. From Division I to Division III, some of the best college sports in the country are played right here in the state of Wisconsin. It's time for the Journey House College Sports Show, powered by Waterstone Bank. Let's turn it over to host Don Wachillas, only on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Welcome in. It's another edition, the first in 2020 of the Journey House College Sports Show, powered by Waterstone Bank. Don Wachillas along with the professor Dan Underberg and our producer Sam Schmitz as we go for the next 2 hours. And it's going to be flat out therapy this evening, boys, as it was a disastrous New Year's Day yesterday. Everything was set. This was going to be the show to start all shows in which we were able to celebrate a season in which the Badgers found a way to make things happen, and yet...
Well, they made things happen.
Oh, but yeah. In absolutely the wrong direction, Daniel. I got to do a couple of things, though, before we start, and that is this. After the Final Four matchup of last weekend, and we'll cover that a little bit later in the show. I had it up to here, and this does real well on radio, right? While I'm waving my hand up to my chin right?
Thing, yeah.
I mean, everybody figures that one out. Excuse me, of Ohio State fans complaining about the calls that went against them, which then cost them a semifinal game. Stop it. You had an opportunity at the end of the game. You had an opportunity to make a play, a little bit of miscommunication. It happens in the game, and you lost. That's it. I will not spend at any point today moaning and groaning about the offensive PI call towards the end of the game. The only thing I will say about the offensive pass interference call, that was the most I have ever seen out of Paul Christ on a sideline.
Oh, it was beautiful.
Losing his mind.
Yep. Yep.
That part I enjoyed. That
I
part I thoroughly enjoyed. But I don't want at all to sit here and say that pass interference call cost the Badgers the Rose Bowl.
No,
what cost the Badgers the Rose Bowl was four turnovers. The fact that we dominated. Again, like I was out there. The Badgers dominated that game and just could not finish it. And with all of that said, that was just one of the best bowl games. And I'm saying this on the losing side of things, as irritated as I was, that was one of the best bowl games of the season so far in comparison to even that Clemson matchup the other night against Ohio State. Last night's game was just spectacular to sit back and watch, even though you come off of it completely irritated as a Badger fan that they lost.
Yeah, you were irritated. I guess I think it's a great way to kind of sum that all up, is just plain flat-out frustration or irritation. I do have to kind of disagree a little bit. I don't really feel like Wisconsin dominated that game.
Seriously?
Because every time they got close to the end zone, they'd bog down. Oregon did a good job of shutting down, Jonathan Taylor. I never really felt like the passing game got going. Not to say that Air Wisconsin works all the time, but I felt that, the four turnovers were the reason that Wisconsin lost.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you watched, for example, we heard working up to the Rose Bowl the entire time that what Oregon does really well, particularly their defensive line, is that they release off blocks. They're able to shake blocks and get in, and that is exactly what happened. It felt to me that Oregon was dominating the defensive line or the line of scrimmage, and that Wisconsin was able to grit its way through to yardage gained and things like that. What killed me, in addition to those stupid turnovers, was how many times did we have a penalty that negated a 5-10 yard run, a good pass play, something like that. I can't remember the last time I saw the offensive line have that many holding calls, have that many false start calls. It was just a poor showing. And so, yeah, that Wisconsin game, the game was there to win. But I just am not of the mindset that this was dominated by Wisconsin and they still lost.
See, and in that regard, I would disagree with you because I'm looking at the stat sheet and I'm thinking, where is it that Oregon showed any oomph when it came to offensive efficiency? Herbert was 14 of 20 for 138 yards and an interception, and yet he's MVP. Why? Because we turned the ball over in essentially their territory. I almost said the red zone, but it felt like that, even though sometimes it was at the 28 or to the 32.
Right.
Anytime Oregon had short field, a short field, if I could talk tonight, that's when all of a sudden he looked like the MVP. When we put them on the other side of the 50, that offense that Oregon was so highly touted going into this season, to me yesterday, he did more damage to his NFL prospect than he did in order to assure himself a first-round pick in next year's NFL draft.
And I look at that, you know, I think about that play where Quintez Cephas was able to squeak into the end zone at the end of the half. End of the first half, he catches the touchdown pass. It's barely into the end zone. It's still a touchdown, no question. But how quickly and viciously, in a clean way, he was hit to push him back into, you know, the 1 to 2 yard line before they figured it was a touchdown. And that's the kind of hitting and that's the kind of striking I was seeing from Oregon. We've been a broken record about Wisconsin's speed now for years. And again, Oregon to me looked like they were quicker to the ball and they were faster.
But are we clouded in our perception, Dan, because of the fact we lost?
Oh, absolutely.
Passing. They only threw for 138 yards and they only rushed for 66.
Mm-hmm.
And they won by a point.
Yeah.
Again, with the gifts that we gave them. For some reason, the Badgers thought Christmas was extended from the previous week and said, here's the ball, go for it. We're going to make life a little bit harder than we need it to be. I don't see Oregon's domination the way I thought they would be able to play against the Badgers. I thought defensively the Badgers were outstanding except for the silly mistakes.
Yeah, well, the silly mistakes of the three massive runs. Yeah, I'm not saying that Oregon dominated. I'm just saying Oregon was better.
So, okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. No, finish your
and
thought.
Those are the reasons why. I thought they were faster than the ball. I thought they were hitting harder. They made the plays when they had to have them, an indication of a good team. Were they lucky? Yes. But at the same time, let me go after this. If you're Oregon's defensive coach, and you know Jonathan Taylor's coming at you, what are you coaching you guys to do? Strip the ball. Danny Davis, same thing. So those, and you know, Jack Cohn, I don't have a problem with as a quarterback. I think he's a good college quarterback, but you know he's not going to rifle the ball at anybody.
Well, and there lies the difference in yesterday's game. When I'm watching the Badgers yesterday, or I'm watching Alabama and Michigan, or you're watching even Minnesota, you know, playing against Auburn, when you look at the quarterbacks whose caliber is a smidge above what Jack Cohn gives you, the difference is profound as far as how the offense runs. Watching now this RPO thing that has become the catchphrase of all catchphrases, but there's truth to the fact that when you can have a quarterback that can not only throw but can run as well. Look what happened when Jack Cohn ran the ball. What did he get, 12, 13 yards on the RPO that the Badgers did run? Mm-hmm. And quite honestly, if the kid had a little bit more speed, that thing would have probably broke for 25 or 30. When I saw that play, to me, that was the clear indication of the difference between what you see at Alabama, Auburn, LSU go down the line, and what we have with the Badgers and Jack Cohn.
Well, and buckle up. Now we're in the offseason. Here it comes.
Oh, yes.
The quarterback controversy. You've got a returning senior, and you've got an all-everything redshirt freshman. Everybody's screaming to see Mertz. And, you know, I love Paul Chryst as a coach. I love how grounded he is.
Yep.
You know, pass interference not included. But I love how he's just able to kind of go with things and just maintain to his character and what he wants to do. But I think that's really going to be pushed over this next 6 months when we get into spring ball and then we get into, you know, training camp leading into that. How many times is he going to get that question? How many times is he going to be pressured publicly? When are you going to give Mertz the ball?
Well, I will.
And that is going to be an incredibly long issue to deal with.
Back it up to what we talked about earlier in the season when the discussion came between Mertz and Cone well early on as the season started to ramp up a little bit. Will we see Cone in the portal? I honestly think by the summer we could see breaking news right here on this station where someone comes on and says they've just looked and Jack Cone's in the portal.
And he's going to Florida State.
Because Cone is going to go someplace and play.
Mm-hmm.
And if he does, more power to him.
No, I agree.
This is not, for me, one of those indications where a guy is leaving and you get bitter and whatever else, like he's turning his back on the program and everything else. This kid can play, and this kid has the right to go wherever and play. I'm just wondering now, with the two guys that we have behind him in the depth chart, or on the depth chart, excuse me, I really think we could see Jack Cone putting his name in the portal and making a move and go someplace else.
I also could see Zach Mertz in the portal.
Do you really?
Yeah,
see, I don't think that's going to happen.
I think this is going to be the great test for Paul Chryst, which is, I think just about any coach is going to want to tell you that they want to go with an established, confident fifth-year senior to run the program, that they've earned the opportunity, that they should be there. And I think that thing, okay, that tendency is going to be the biggest hump for Chryst to get over, because there's no question, okay, that number five can throw the ball better than Cone. There's no question about that. But Cone's going to have basically 2+ years of starting, barely, you know. And I think any coach is going to have to fight the hesitancy to say, well, he knows the offense, he can make the adjustments, he can do all these things, but you've got this physical beast waiting in the background. What is he going to do? So I agree with you. Someone's going to be in that portal. Someone's going to be there.
And I hear what you're saying, and I just think it's going to be Cone, because I think with the potential of Jonathan Taylor leaving, and he hasn't made the official announcement yet, but I think all indications are he's going to go pro.
Mm-hmm.
I think next year then becomes the natural transition from what we saw this year in Jonathan Taylor and Jack Cone running the show to now a Graham Mertz and whatever running back we decide to plug in, because that's the one thing we do. And it was even brought up on the broadcast yesterday. Linemen and running backs, that's our MO at Wisconsin. That's what we do well, and that's how we play the game, that we're going to find ourselves the next Jonathan Taylor-type back, maybe not to his specific caliber, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
but we're going to get ourselves another good running back behind some big old boys up front. And I think with that transition, I think it becomes natural to see Mertz take over and run the offense now for the next few years.
Yeah, I can totally see that happening. I can. That's a completely reasonable solution, right? What does reason have to do with college sports?
No.
I think, you know, and I just, you know, part of the thing with Cone going into the portal is if he's going to go, he's tasted the Rose Bowl, he's tasted excellent football, he's tasted big games. He's not going to want to go to a minor program, so he's going to have to find a major program that has an opportunity for him to play, potentially an opportunity for him to win, kind of along the lines of what Wisconsin provided for Russell Wilson a few years ago. If he can't find that, he may choose to stay here and fight.
That could be.
You know?
That could be.
Which I think is actually better for Mertz, to have that pressure and to push him to being better. But, there's so many variables in this, Don. I'm not sure exactly where they're going to go with this. You know, let's say we pull on the new running back, right? Well, do you want the two guys right behind center to be essentially redshirt freshman or a freshman or sophomore and a redshirt freshman? Or do you want that established senior to kind of help smooth the transition for the running back when you know you've potentially got an excellent quarterback waiting in the wings? I don't know.
Yeah.
I just think, well, number one, it's great talk show fodder.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
But number two, I think Wisconsin's in this really weird transition place where now they're a good team, but there are key components to that offense more so than any other year. Like, what are you going to do?
Yeah. And you then know? You have to look also at the receiving core.
Mm-hmm.
Who decides to come back? When they do come back, who's healthy? Who makes that next step? You can't throw a Graham Mertz necessarily out there with nobody to throw the ball to.
That's right.
So this idea, this discussion, I think, as you said, Daniel, is going to be one that Paul Chris is going to be facing a great deal now in this offseason. An offseason that, quite honestly, I thought yesterday, had they won the Rose Bowl, it would have erased a lot of the that we had at the end of the season, losing mm-hmm. to Ohio State twice.
Mm-hmm.
Losing to Ohio State twice, I don't think was the end of the world. I
no.
think as we looked and looked forward at the schedule and saw who the Badgers were going to face, we thought, all right, we'll get Ohio State once. If we lose, fine. We still win the Big Ten West. We'll get another shot at them. We'll see what happens. Well, that played out. The problem was that Illinois game. And that Illinois game was kind of like last year when we lost to BYU. remember how that one just kind of put a wedge into what the season was?
Bring that up.
That's what Illinois was this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, if you can take care of Oregon, if you can take care of a top 10 team, if you can win the Rose Bowl, that kind of erases some of that Illinois feeling that you had as the season went. And then to lose the game the way they did yesterday did nothing to erase that kind of that nastiness that was the regular season.
Yeah, a little bit of that lost season feeling is here. And again, I could live just fine knowing that we lost twice to Ohio State.
Yeah.
That part doesn't bother me. It's the Illinois game that'll just get after me. And this game will stick there too because, I'm on a different side of this in terms of whether Wisconsin dominated or not, but at the end of the day, they gave up four turnovers. They have even one less. They probably win this game.
Well, and the one turnover we're going to talk about after the break happened again in the third quarter and happened to be once again a very, very pivotal moment, almost at the same exact mark as it did back in the Big Ten Championship. We'll talk about it next. It's the Journey House College Sports Show powered by Waterstone Bank. Happy New Year, everybody, right here on The Fan. It's the Journey House College Sports Show powered by Waterstone Bank right here on 1250 AM, 105.7 FM, The Fan, or anywhere as we are a radio.com station. Daniel, before we get into what was probably one of the biggest turning points of the game yesterday,
mm-hmm. Yep.
You got something. Go, sir.
Hey, you said this is a radio station, and I experienced what would have to be a New Year's miracle, and I want to acknowledge that, was out for New Year's libation and met a person who listens to the show.
Nice.
Listens to the show.
Nice.
It was incredible. So if you're out there, Juan Gothaz from Cedarburg, we're glad to have you listening. We hope you keep listening. We appreciate it. So
yeah,
you
we
take
definitely
care.
Do.
Have a great new year. Now yeah. Back to you, sir. Throw
all
it
right.
Back to you.
All right. Now we're done with all the niceties.
Yeah, right. Let's get back to the turnover.
You know what yesterday did?
No.
You go into the new year and you have New Year's resolutions,
right? Oh,
it's
all right? Wonderful. It's glorious for one day.
It's going to be, we're going to lose weight, we're going to work out, and we're going to look at things in a much more pleasant perspective. And then yesterday happened. Not only do the Badgers lose, but then I got to turn on Marquette, which we're going to get to later in the show as we start to evolve more into the basketball mode here on the college sports side.
Mm-hmm.
Then I got to watch Marquette like they've never played the game before as a team run up and down the floor against Creighton. That whole New Year's resolution crap went right out the window in a heartbeat. But the turning point yesterday, the irony of everything for me was that it was once again in the punting game. And the similarities between the Rose Bowl and the Big Ten Championship are a little eerie. So Anthony Lottie, the punter for the Badgers, this part for me, I get no thrill whatsoever, because these are kids. And you will hear Paul Chris say time and time and again, none of these young men went out there and intentionally tried to make a mistake. And I don't believe in my heart of hearts this poor kid went out there and tried to have the type of error that occurred on his shoulders again have happened. But the irony and the similarities to what took place yesterday in the Rose Bowl and what took place in the Big Ten Championship are a little eerie. So yesterday, there's 12:07 to go in the third quarter. It's 4th and 10. Lottie's back to punt. He takes the step. Ball slips out of his hands. Turnover. Touchdown, Oregon. Big Ten Championship. It's not 12:07. It's 12:03 to go in the third quarter. And it's not 4th and 10. Ohio State in the Big Ten Championship, it's 4th and 15. The ball slips out of his hands. And as we talked about after the Big Ten Championship game, that's when the avalanche began, right? Mm-hmm. That's when Ohio State found that opening and ran away with it. Oregon wasn't going to do what Ohio State did.
No, Ohio State hung
in there with Oregon. And if you go back and look at that play, as I think I did at nausea, Anthony Lottie was about to get himself crushed.
Oh, yeah.
There were three guys that had broke in. Buddy Breeze gets the accolades because he's the one who picked up the football and ran in for the touchdown. But Drew Mathis and Hacky Woods were right there. And I think had Lottie taken that next step and tried to punt, that punt's either going to be blocked. Now, the only thing you could hope is that it found whatever little crease, made its way through, and he gets hit, and you get the 15-yard roughing the punter penalty. But watching that over and over again, I almost can't fault Anthony for taking his eyes off of the ball, looking at what was coming at him. But again, it was a punter that was the turning point in a negative way to how that game was progressing. And I don't think, Dan, in all the years of playing and watching football, I have ever seen a punter drop the ball the way Lottie has in two games at very, very crucial moments.
Yeah, it really was an unfortunate moment, and it really was a turning point in that game. But at the same time, man, there was a whole vibe to that game. Or when he dropped the ball, I'm like, well, of course he dropped the ball. This is the way this game's going. Yeah. You know, there was this kind of that moment where it really felt like the Badger team, I don't know if you want to call it a curse, but it was like you just got that sense of today is not their day, you know. And they were still in the game, and they're overcoming, and they're in the game, and they're able to manage being in the lead. And then all of a sudden that ball gets dropped, and I'm just kind of thinking, for me, there's always that moment of the game where you realize, nope, not this game, not this year, whatever it is. You can go back to certain games and you just know, right? And when Anthony Lottie dropped the ball, I thought, all right, that's it. Time to have another drink, because this is not going to go the way I wanted it to go.
So, Daniel, Sam, I think, can we agree that it wasn't the PI call that cost the Badgers the game? It was the four turnovers. Now, with that said, the other thing that was really crawling under my skin today in listening to various programs on the radio was the dismissal of the Rose Bowl. That the Rose Bowl doesn't mean anything anymore because we now have the college playoff system. And to me, that sounds like someone who lost a game and now wants to downplay anything. I'll flip this on you. Had we won the Rose Bowl, I think we would have been talking about the fact that we won the granddaddy of the bowl games, and this is now going to help propel this squad into next year with recruiting, and you go right down the checklist.
Mm-hmm.
But because we lost, suddenly we want to downplay the Rose Bowl, that it doesn't have the same meaning that it once did because it was not there in essence to play for a national championship. And my argument to that would be, The Rose Bowl every year was not about the national championship. It was about the Big Ten.
Right.
And back in the day, the Pac-10, the two best teams going at it in what Keith Jackson called the granddaddy of bowl games. And suddenly, because we lost now, we're being dismissive. And that really, to me, I don't want to be Ohio State. I don't want to be Ohio State complaining and crying that they didn't get the calls and that's why they're not in the championship game. I don't want to be one of those fan bases that then becomes dismissive of the Rose Bowl simply because we lost the game. Because I think the tenure, the tone, the way you would attack on talk shows like this, the Rose Bowl after a win would be much different.
I agree with you, and I'll throw this in a different direction. I got a little tired yesterday listening to the announcing crew about how important of a game this was for Oregon. Okay, this is a team, it's senior class had lost or had only won four games its first year. They had to build up, they had to rebuild and all this stuff. And what an incredible moment it would be for Oregon if they won this game. And so Oregon wins the game, and oh, what a difference this is going to make, and oh, how this is going to help, and how it's going to set them up for next year, and they're talking about all these opportunities for this program. Fine. But to your point, Don, we would be saying the same things if Wisconsin had won. Guess what? You know what Wisconsin's going to do when they go out there? They're going to say, we played to a 28-27 loss in the Rose Bowl. We were this close. We finished probably top 10. We'll see how it ends up when it's all said and done, you know? And here's the other thing real quick. Win or lose the Rose Bowl, you know what we're going to get for recruits? And I mean this not as snarky as it's going to come across. 3- and 4-star, because that's what we do. We're not going to get that 5-star recruit. We've got the best walk-on system in the country. Our guys that are going to go pro and do really, really well are probably going to come from the walk-ons. So I'm sorry, anytime we can play and be a marquee game on January 1st where people are watching it and watching in that venue and watching a great game and seeing the sunset, you know, come over the mountains and just this beautiful spot, don't tell me that your recruits don't want to play there.
Sam, the Rose Bowl is not watching the Detroit City Motor Lawnmower Back-Em-Up Repellent Bowl or whatever it is these days. There are still some bowl games that hold significance, mm-hmm. The Rose Bowl being one of them, whether you're playing for a national championship or not.
I mean, as a program, I think you got to take a step back and you got to set your expectations. The Rose Bowl for Wisconsin is the closest and biggest, I think, bowl game that you can get. I mean, this is the closest shot that they're going to have to getting in the playoffs. And, you know, I think in the future, just to get close or to get into the playoffs is going to be, I mean, it's just a blessing. But so, I mean, you think about the history that Wisconsin has in the Rose Bowl, too. If we would have won it, like you said, we would have been talking about it for days. And I remember, too, like when we played Ohio State the second time, there were people saying, oh, well, if we play them well enough, I mean, hopefully we can get a chance to get in the Rose Bowl. So people like wanted to be in there.
Yeah.
That's a great point.
Yes.
I don't get on the station, too, I don't get the attitude of like, oh, well, you know, it's just another Rose Bowl loss. You know?
That to me really, it turned a little bit listening, like I said, to various shows. It just this dismissive quality about the Rose Bowl when, in fact, had we won, I think there would have been a lot of talk about, you beat now the number 5 team going into yesterday. Mm-hmm. You beat the number 5 team in the country, and what coulda, shoulda, woulda been, as opposed to, it's the Rose Bowl. No one cares anymore. It's not part of the college playoffs. Don't get me wrong. The college playoffs have created a situation where some bowl games now don't have the same stature they once did.
The Gator Bowl.
Right.
Yeah.
Being one of them. The Sugar Bowl last night, I think merely because of the two schools going at it. I mean, the Sugar Bowl in the past has had two schools like a Wisconsin and Oregon that drew heavily,
mm-hmm.
and it had a bigger impact when watching. These bowls still matter. Now, can we argue about some of the lesser bowls that lead up to New Year's Day? Sure, I get that. I think we're a little oversaturated. I think we're rewarding teams that are hovering around 500 and giving them an extra game. Fine. But when you look at yesterday, when you have two top 10 teams going at it, I just, again, the dismissiveness towards the fact that the Rose Bowl did not give you an opportunity to play for a national championship, just it rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah, I agree, and but you know what, guys, that's the reality now. Okay, there number one, I think there was just a general depression, because not only did we lose the game, not only did Wisconsin lose the way it lost, we probably saw Jonathan Taylor's last game. We saw it was just kind of this, oh, whatever, we lost the Rose Bowl and it's just no big deal. And you know, you're all right that if we win, it's a completely different discussion. But at the end of the day, Wisconsin is always going to be that team that is going to hover around the Rose Bowl, and maybe, you know, maybe once in our lifetime they're gonna find their way into that top four. They're gonna find their way into the semifinals or finals. They're just gonna have that one miraculous team that gets to that place, kind of like the basketball team did a few years ago,
right?
And takes you along on that ride. But generally speaking, they're always gonna be floating around. Yeah, again, 10-2, 11-1, 9-3, that kind of a thing. It's very hard for these programs to get over the top. So, you know what? Again, Don, you and I have said this now for years. Remember when Rose Bowl was just a pipe dream?
And here comes the follow-up question to that. And Sam, I'll start with you, because you've got a few years to our youth on us here.
It's a really nice way to say it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I was better than we just old sitting over here. But
what?
I wonder, with everything going on, whether it's the Badgers, the Bucks, the Brewers, the Packers, we're in this bubble right now where we've got a lot of our teams playing very, very, very well. And I just wonder, because of it, are we underappreciating what these teams have done? And since we're talking college football right now, let's stick with the Badgers. Are we underappreciating the consistency that this team has shown over the years? Because old people like Dan and I remember what it was like when 500 was a pipe dream, right?
Oh, the Veer was going to solve all the problems.
The Veer was going to do it all. So I do you think we're underappreciating what the Badgers are doing?
I do, and I think next year we're going to be wishing that we had this kind of, you know, a bowl game to talk about, because you don't know what you're going to get if Jonathan Taylor decides to leave. You don't know what you're going to get if Cohen starts, if, you know, Mertz takes over, whatever. But I think there's another side to it, too, and me and Evan Heffelfinger, another part-time producer here, were talking about last night after the loss, is that overall, like with the Bucks, the Packers, the Brewers, and even the Badgers, like football program especially, is that they've been so successful, they've been getting, you know, just to that point that you want to be at, possibly win like a big game or a championship, and then they blow it.
Yeah.
It's kind of been a theme, you know, the past year or so, that it's, I mean, just those ultimate Wisconsin tees.
Well, you know, one of those maddeningly beautiful things about the Wisconsin teams, remember at the beginning of this season, who was going to win the Big Ten West? It was going to be Nebraska.
Right.
Or it was going to be Iowa.
Right.
Okay? Wisconsin wasn't in the conversation. And for whatever reason, it's never mattered since Alvarez got here, it never mattered what coach it's been. When little is expected of Wisconsin, that's when they produce.
Right.
Okay? And you go on this ride and you get to this point, and then all of a sudden, okay, it doesn't end the way you want it to. But then I've also learned the same way. Oh, this is Wisconsin's year. They've got all the talent. They've got all the pieces. What happens? They don't produce.
Right. They don't live up to the expectation.
No, they don't do it.
So since Sam brought it up, let's look at next year's schedule real quick. It's one that it's got some interesting matchups and a couple of trap games mixed in there with it. So they open against Indiana. Then week two, it's Southern Illinois. Then this is the one that will be the killer. Week three against Appalachian State.
Oh.
Appalachian State has been that mid-major, which is not a mid-major anymore.
That
Call
sucks.
It whatever it is. But Appalachian State is here week three.
For the record, listeners, Indiana doesn't suck anymore.
Indiana right now beating Tennessee in that Gator Bowl 19-9 in the third quarter.
1-2.
So you open with Indiana. You got Southern Illinois, Appalachian State. Then it's at Michigan. Then you get a neutral site, though in essence a home site. They're going to play Notre Dame at Lambeau. Then it's Minnesota at home, Maryland at Maryland, Illinois at home, Northwestern at Wrigley Field.
Okay.
That, to me, is going to be an awesome game. Purdue at Purdue, Nebraska at home, Iowa on the road. to close out the 2020 season. So when you talk about expectations, not knowing what the quarterback situation or the running back situation is going to be next year, and we haven't even talked about the skilled positions as far as the wideouts go or the linebacking core goes or whatever as you make your way down the list, that's a gauntlet of a schedule coming up in 2020.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough one. I didn't realize App State was going to be on there for next year. That makes it kind of scary. You know, there's a very real possibility that Wisconsin could start 1-2.
Yeah.
And then they strengthen it up, and maybe they finish 8-4 in the season. They figure some things out. They go, you know, they take an L in Michigan. Who knows what's going to happen in Michigan, by the way. The thing that kind of surprised me out of that schedule, and I know it has nothing to do with overall record, man, how did the Minnesota game get stuck so early in that season?
Yeah, usually it's later. Right. We wrap up with Minnesota.
Decent weather for a Minnesota game? That'll be weird.
Yeah, but decent weather. Week six could be
October.
Like a hailstorm as opposed to snow around here. I think besides the Notre Dame matchup at Lambeau, it's that Northwestern game at Wrigley.
Because it's Northwestern.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because how did you describe it this year?
They dig a hole, and then they
want you to fight your way out, mm-hmm. and that's how that game worked. Now you take the hole, you drag them in,
field,
and you do it at Wrigleyville?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that place is going to be off the chain. That is going to be a game that will be one for the record books. Not necessarily what happens on the field, but what happens off the field will probably be more entertaining just knowing how those two teams tend to match up with one another. We got to take a break. On the other side of the break, we'll talk some headlines, especially when we talk about that Final Four matchup last weekend that had one of the biggest games in college football history and one of the most lopsided games in college football playoff history, and we'll get to it all next. It's the Journey House College Sports Show, powered by Waterstone Bank, right here on The Fan.
It's a hot news tip for your radio. It's the headlines. Tell me, have you heard it? Headlines. Read all about it, baby. Headlines. Headlines. Headlines.
Yeah. Welcome back. It's the Journey House College Sports Show, powered by Waterstone Bank, right here on 1250 AM, 105.7 FM, The Fan, or anywhere on the radio.com app. We've got headlines to get to as we look around collegiate football as things are starting to wrap up with the championship game going to be played Monday night, where we'll see LSU and Clemson go at it. So let's look back, Daniel, at the semifinals from last Saturday. And first up, it was LSU and Oklahoma.
What a joke.
I think LSU just scored again. LSU wins 63-28. And I'll say this. Number one, please, 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 to the four-letter network, formerly known as ESPN, stop trying to sell me on Big 12 football. And mm-hmm. it's going to be a defensive battle. Baylor last night, I heard somebody say, Baylor comes out and hits. This is going to be a smash-mouth game.
It's what?
This is Big 12 football. Big 12 football is the equivalent of arena football.
I was going to say, they hit the dasher boards really hard.
Down and up and down, and that's what they do. Now, I'm not taking anything away from those schools within that system. But when you take a team from the Big 12 and put it up against a team like LSU that can play defense, and you shut them down offensively, well, you saw what happened. LSU will roll up and put 63 on you while you struggle to put 28 on the board, and most of those points came against second and third level players on that LSU team.
49 points, guys. 49 points in the first half. I think they had close to 400 yards in the first half. And I kind of lost my attention, kind of fithered away, probably somewhere around 28 or 35.
Sure.
But, you know, am I wrong? Does that mean they scored a touchdown on every possession in the first half?
Yes. Every time they touched the ball.
Okay, that's insane. And so what it does for me is that you look at the committee that's there. Now, we talked about it for the last 3 or 4 weeks. There's the top three teams and the other one, and Oklahoma was the other one.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And so what that does now is, like, to the committee, it's like, how do we avoid this from happening again? Because you're telling me that there wasn't another team out there that at least couldn't have held LSU to 42
I'm looking,
in the first half?
I'm watching between the Badgers and the Ducks yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at Alabama and Michigan. You watch Auburn and Minnesota. And I'm thinking, who would have at least given LSU a game? I'm not saying beat LSU.
Mm-hmm.
Who would have given LSU a game? And the crazy part, and this pains me to say it, Minnesota. Watching Minnesota play Auburn, I thought Minnesota could have given LSU a game. I'm not saying they would have beat them. I think they would have given them a game, which I don't think I could say for the Badgers. I don't think I could say that with Oregon. I don't think Alabama. Alabama looked flat for a half of football.
Yeah, they
played
did.
Better in the second half, mm-hmm. but Alabama right now looks like a team that needs to regroup. The only team that I could think about as far as giving LSU a run for their money was Minnesota.
It's funny. I didn't come to that same conclusion. And this, you know, oh, man, you're a homer. But here's why. I would go with Wisconsin on that. And, again, I don't think Wisconsin wins. I think it's kind of an Ohio State blowout, kind of that kind of experience. But what Wisconsin proved they could do against Ohio State, which, for the record, I thought Ohio State was the better team, but they lost to Clemson. We'll get into that later. Wisconsin was always able to put pressure on the quarterback, and they were able to get in there, and they were able to make some stops. Oklahoma couldn't even do that. Joe Burrow was just standing back there doing whatever he wanted to do, you know, read the paper, you know, check for messages on his phone, and then, oh, look, someone's open.
Well, in the times they did get what resembled pressure
mm-hmm.
came from the corner,
yeah.
and all he had to do was step up and then go right back to it. Was almost like, yeah, I got the paper open. Well, hold on a second. Let me put it down. Let me step up. I'll open the paper back up, mm-hmm. wait for somebody to get open. And you almost felt bad as the game progressed, Sam, watching the Oklahoma secondary try to maintain coverage, not to cover, maintain coverage
right.
on the LSU receivers because of the time Burrow was getting.
I mean, after what you saw in that Georgia game, too, against them, you know, you saw Burrow's Heisman moment when he had that, you know, I don't even know what it was, like 40, 50-yard pass downfield. It's like watching Oklahoma all year, you know just how bad their defense is. I just want to know, like, what the committee was thinking.
I just don't know who else they were going to take.
Yeah.
You know,
I get that.
I get the argument as to after seeing what Oklahoma did. But I just, again, I don't know who else they could have justifiably have taken without everybody storming the committee, so to speak, mm-hmm. because they would have been outraged.
Yeah.
It bears the question again, Daniel, as you said, between the top three and the rest of college sports, because there's not a gap. There's a Grand Canyon type crevice that sits there between the top three teams and the rest of college football.
And it really doesn't seem like it's going to be changing, does it?
No.
I mean, it's you've got your top three teams, and then you've got it's what's odd about it is you have an upper middle class because now, you know what I mean? Because guess who's not living in the penthouse anymore? Alabama.
Right.
So now they're your number four team. Georgia is your number four team. Teams that could probably in most conferences in this nation clean up.
All right.
But they're not going to be quite good enough for those top three.
Let's backtrack a little bit before we get to that Clemson-Ohio State game. Watching the Sugar Bowl last night, if you watch Georgia and Baylor, there were a lot of people that thought Georgia could have been that number four team had this, that, or the other thing happened within one game.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, I'll tell you what, watching Georgia against Baylor, Georgia would have fared no differently, in my opinion, than what Oklahoma did.
Yeah, maybe. I'm going to go kind of the SEC route on this one. That, you know, they're used to a particular style of play that, you know, it's Baylor isn't used to. And I just, and the same thing when you look at Oklahoma, I would hope that if you would have picked a Georgia and put them in number four, they could at least represent a little bit better. My expectation is that they would have been able to do that. Now, again, do they win? Look, I think this is LSU's year. I'm still expecting a really good game on Monday night, but I think this is LSU's year.
All right, so the game Monday night will be Clemson facing LSU as Clemson beat Ohio State 29-23 in probably what was one of the best semifinal playoff games in the history of this current format. I mean, that was one for the ages, so to speak. Two teams really going at it. Ohio State, not pleased with the targeting call. By the letter of the law, it was the right call. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can argue about the quarterback ducking his head and everything else, but these kids have to understand that's just the way the game is being called these days, and especially with replay. By the letter of the law, it was the correct call. The only thing to me Ohio State could gripe about was the fumble, because I thought it was a fumble and it took a touchdown away. And yet Ohio State held Clemson, scored on the next possession. Ohio State had an opportunity to win that game at the end of the game. It was miscommunication between quarterback and receiver on a busted play. He throws the interception. Ohio State loses. To me, listening to Ohio State fans was a lot like listening to some Badger fans today trying to dismiss certain things. You lost the game. It was a tough game.
Yep.
You lost. You had a great season. Appreciate what you've done as a team, an organization, a university, and don't diminish that by crying over the fumble and the targeting call.
So two things. They know we're up against the break. Number one, I thought Ohio State lost that game in the first half. They left two touchdowns.
Yes, sir.
They should have been up by a whole hell of a lot more. So there's that. But what really struck me about these two teams is that there was a fantastic team going up against a battle-tested team, and you could see it as the game progressed. And Clemson knew how to grit its way through that game. They did not lose sight of who they were, what they had to accomplish, and they gritted it out. A battle-tested team did that. Ohio State, I would still pick Ohio State in that game. They're a better team, but look at their mistakes.
You look at the mistakes.
The battle-tested team doesn't do that.
You look at, as you said, the points that were left on the field as opposed to being put on the scoreboard. You take somebody like J.K. Dobbins, who injures that ankle, who was hobbled, who wasn't the same the second half. There were some things that went against Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with you. The better team was the Buckeyes going into that matchup on Saturday. But there is something to be said about a Clemson team that's been there before and showed they knew how to handle the adversity of a playoff game and all of the pressure that surrounded it. And now they'll be playing for the national championship Monday night as they'll take on LSU at the Mercedes-Benz Superdome down in New Orleans. When we come back after the break, the money train rolls in one last time, and we'll get the pick. We'll do it next. This is the Journey House College Sports Show, powered by Waterstone Bank, right here on The Fan.
This is how we do it.
It's the Journey House College Sports Show, powered by Waterstone Bank, right here on 1250 AM, 105.7 FM, or anywhere on the radio.com app. Happy New Year to everyone as we spend day two of 2020 trying to... it's almost like a therapy session, Dan. We just get to vent. We're going to get this all out of our system in hopes that by clearing the air, then 2020 will evolve into the type of year we're hoping for our teams to have.
Maybe Seinfeld had it wrong.
Sure, yeah. Didn't start that way yesterday.
The Festivus should have been January 2nd.
The airing of the grievances. Yes.
And just do it that way.
Yes, a delayed Festivus for the rest of us right here on the Journey House College Sports Show, powered by Waterstone Bank. As we got to thank Waterstone Bank for everything they've done in helping keep this show up and running, and their affiliation with Journey House, who's doing some really, really good stuff here on the south side of Milwaukee. You know what, Daniel? Between that idea of not wanting to underappreciate what the Badgers, what Marquette,
mm-hmm.
what UWM, what these schools have done, and trying not to get into too much of the fandom, which is where I think I've been the last couple of days, that fandom where you just want to throw something at somebody at some point because what you're seeing is not necessarily what the perception you were hoping for was. that gets to be a little bit challenging here and there.
We have recently, so I got to go pro sports just for a minute. You know, we live in this place where we've got the, we were told with free agency there would be no more kind of massive long-term winning teams. You know, they just go on and on and on. And then we get it, and now we're used to seeing Lakers and, Golden State, sorry.
Right.
We're used to seeing, you know, the Patriots. We're used to seeing the Red Sox. These types of things going on. And so we forget how hard it is to get to the end of the line.
Yeah.
Win or lose, because now we just want our taste of that, sweet nectar of championship, and it's so, so hard to do.
And especially when you've been knocking on the door, so speak, as Sam pointed out before the break, that we're right there. It's just a matter of, can we kick that door open and finally walk through? We're having some technical difficulties in trying to get a hold of TA, but I do know that TA, as it stands right now, will take Clemson giving four. Clemson at -4 right now. So TA's pick is to take Clemson giving four in the national championship, which will take place Monday night as they'll take on LSU. We're going to transition out of football into college basketball as we make our way to the top of the hour. This is the Journey House College Sports Show powered by Waterstone Bank. Stick around. Hour number two coming right up.
It's time to talk about college sports. From Division I to Division III, some of the best college sports in the country are played right here in the state of Wisconsin. It's time for the Journey House College Sports Show, powered by Waterstone Bank. Let's turn it over to host Don Wachillas, only on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.
Number two of the Journey House College Sports Show, powered by Waterstone Bank, right here on 105.7 FM, The Fan, 1250 AM, or on the radio.com app. Don Wachillas, along with the professor Dan Underberg, our producer Sam Schmidt, making sure that we've got everything sailing in the right direction, a.k.a. otherwise known as Wesley, you know, sitting back there hitting the buttons the way they need to be. All right, let's transition into basketball. Let's start with Marquette, because since we're on a roll, moaning and groaning about what happened on New Year's Day, what better way than to keep
the depression alive,
really keep the ball rolling, so to speak, as Marquette opened the Big East season with a game against Creighton last night, and they went down hard, 92-75. You know, Creighton up by as many as 26 towards the end of the game. This was not a game at any point, at any time, did you think Marquette was going to have an opportunity to pull one out, kind of like the miracle that we saw last year where they got, 5 points in like 1.6 seconds or whatever. Whatever it panned out to be. But I got some serious questions, Mr. Daniel, about this Marquette team. This Marquette team that is loaded with talent and for some reason right now just doesn't seem to mesh. We'll talk about Wisconsin. We'll talk about UWM coming up, as well as some of the D3 stuff. But I'm going to make one quick generalization about Marquette, Wisconsin, and UWM. It has been crazy watching some of these games to see the way these teams operate offensively, that they've drawn up schemes, they being the coaches, drawn up schemes in which some of these players have been wide open, and the inability to consistently knock down shots has been an Achilles heel for Marquette, Wisconsin, and UWM. And we've got a lot of basketball to go, but if these teams could get to a level in which they could start hitting these jumpers with more regularity, you would not see scores like we saw yesterday with Marquette.
Can I ask you guys something? Do you think that the jump shot has become a lost art? And I'm not talking about the three-point shot. I mean the jump shot, the 12-footer, the 15-footer, that seemed years ago, I won't call it automatic, but you were pretty confident in the guys you had on the floor, you could make them. And again, throwing out the glory days of the Badgers and whatnot, it just seems like that particular shot is there's so much focus on the three-point shot and then getting the line. Why? Because analytics say those are your most valuable points. You're definitely seeing that in these three teams right now.
I have a feeling what we're seeing is the evolution of how the game has gone over the last 10 to 15 to 20 years. Go back to the 1980s when Jordan broke through. What did we see? Anybody who played the game wanted to clear out, get to the rim, slam. I mean, Jordan was the human highlight reel. We lost the outside shooting. Remember, the talk was we nobody knows how to shoot anymore. All anybody wants to do is clear out, get to the rim, slam it, be a highlight reel that way. Then all of a sudden we saw Golden State use the three-point line like no one has ever used it before. And now we're seeing exactly what you're talking about. You either want to shoot from beyond the arc or you want to be at the free throw line. Maybe underneath here and there with your big guy getting something off the glass or slamming one home, but everybody wants to shoot from downtown. At some point, I think that shooting will work its way back in where they're shooting off the elbow, so to speak, but it's going to take some time. So I don't think the jump shot is necessarily become a lost art. I think the appreciation of that 12, 15, 18 foot shot is what we've lost appreciation for because it's not a three ball.
It's interesting because, you know, again, want to stay in college sports, but watching the Bucks game last night, the effort to move the ball around and when you had an open shot either down low or even kind of in that 12 to 15 foot range, the first thing you did is you look for the open man that's behind the arc. That's the shot you want. And I see that more and more in college balls looking for that. So, yeah, I agree with you that it is there's a lost appreciation for that. I think there is. I think the ones that are really good at it, I'm not sure if they're sticking around long in play in college ball to play before they're making the move up to another level. But, yeah, I still think, man, it just seems to me that it is a lost art. It is because it's not as common anymore. Okay. It's not that thing. You don't look for that specialist in the 12 to 15 foot range. No one's looking for that.
I think what happens, Dan, is a lot like what we see in football. What we're going to see eventually is the ability for teams to defend the three at a much better rate than what we're seeing now. So then what happens, you've got to alter. And when you alter, suddenly that 12, 15, 18 foot shot becomes open. You take advantage of it. Once that happens on a more regular basis, that's when I think we're going to see things change. Now, will that happen this year, next year, the year after? I think it's going to be a while. I just think we see this natural flow to the game where we spent so many years of watching human highlight reels. I mean, look at the NBA. The NBA adapted its defensive rules to allow teams to clear things out so that you could get one-on-one, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we rotated four guys to one side, and it was Jordan playing one-on-one against whoever was defending him because that's what you could market and sell to the public. Then after some time when people got a little bit tired of it, so to speak, but then you also didn't have necessarily the marketing of certain athletes because you didn't have that same skill level, suddenly the defensive rules within the NBA changed. Now, in college, because that's what we're focused on, college is going to emulate because that's where the pipeline is headed.
Mm-hmm.
And so suddenly you saw the NBA go back to, you could play some zone, which wasn't allowed when Jordan was first really rocking the rims. You could play a zone, and now we're seeing things evolve to the outside shot. I just think once that takes place, that evolution of bringing it back inside the arc is coming up next, and you'll see the jump shot being utilized better and more efficiently than what we're seeing right now.
No, just to kind of add a dance point, too. Sorry to take it back to pro hoops because I was like covering the Bucks game for the Fan last night. But it's kind of surprising, too, when you're talking about moving the ball and guys just sticking behind the arc, it's kind of surprising that Giannis, especially, didn't kind of master that elbow jumper. I mean, now you're seeing it, you know, he's making the three-pointers and stuff like that, but it's kind of surprising they didn't. He tried to get that jumper down, but he didn't stick with it. And I just hate the analytics driving the facts that you know, oh, well, if you're going to take a jumper, just take a couple steps back and just do a three. And I think it's eventually it should come back for the big guys, especially in college basketball, because you're going to have guys who are going to try to shoot the three ball, but they just can't do it.
I just wonder if at some point they're going to move the line back, because you've got so many guys now who can shoot at a decent percentage from outside the arc. If we don't see that arc being brought back a little bit. Now, there are going to be some. It's not going to bother. It ain't going to bother Curry. I mean, you can Curry, you know, taking jumpers from the half-court line and draining them like I could drain them from, like, 2 feet. I just wonder if the NBA is going to alter. And then once the NBA alters, that's when you see it affect collegiate basketball, because then they make some alterations themselves.
I don't think you'll see the NBA push a three-point line back, and only because now that's what people are paying to see. They're paying to see that ball go through the hoop from, you know, from that distance. And I don't think you will see them do that to kind of minimize that number any more than you're going to see the 10-foot hoop get any higher. You know, it's going to stay, at least it's going to stay there for quite some time. You know, and looking in terms of the change of the game going back collegially a little bit, I think it's what's going to happen when you see these sudden pivot points where all of a sudden you realize it's the 3-point shot. Before then, it was, you know, trying to avoid anybody from dunking on you in the lane and all these things, is that defenses catch up. But then all of a sudden, out of the blue, there appears to be that one or two player, those generational players, that are able to take advantage of the new style of basketball in a way that we haven't seen. LeBron came in and did that. You know, I really do think Giannis is a freak just because of his side and his speed. He really doesn't have that outside shot. He's kind of a throwback in a degree. But you're going to see the next great college basketball player, or the next great NBA player, sorry, is going to come through the ranks, and it's going to be clear that this kid can take advantage of the new style, the new system, where the gaps are in the NBA, you know? And when you've got guys in the NBA, you're watching Brooke Lopez and Robin Lopez hoist threes, okay? At some point, you're right, defenses will catch up, but it's going to be that kid, that freshman or that sophomore, that's going to say, wait a minute, I know what to do, where they can open that up once again that the NBA suddenly seems unprepared for.
All right, let's go back to Marquette here. Are we looking at a team that has the potential, Daniel, to underachieve? And I'm not wishing for this, because it sounds like I am, but Coach Wojo has had quality talent on the floor, and yet for whatever reason, this team has not produced to the level that many feel they should be at. And even Wojo himself this year said, coming into this season, this is probably the most talented team that he's had at Marquette. Now, again, a lot of basketball to be played and only one game now in the Big East. We're 0-1 in the
mm-hmm,
Big East.
Right.
Just one game into conference play. But it's hard to not think something could happen here in not the most positive fashion by watching that game last night. That team did not look ready for what Creighton was giving him last night.
This team has the ability to go on a 3 or 4 game losing streak and has the ability right away to turn around and go on a 3 to 4 game winning streak. That is mentally how they're designed right now. We've seen this now, you know, to walk into Madison, lose to Wisconsin the way that they did when, you know, they're a much better team than the
right
one they showed in Wisconsin. And they have the ability to do that, and I think that's their mental makeup right now. I think the other challenge is We forget that when the Hauser brothers were there, you know, there was some establishment in terms of flow for that team. And now you've got new players stepping in, and they're really trying to reestablish what their flow is going to be. And the other part about it is when you've got Marcus Howard and he's not on,
yeah,
then it becomes a lot harder.
And that is, for me, the biggest concern is the importance of Marcus Howard and what happens when Howard is not in the flow of the offense. We saw it at the end of last year. What were teams doing? Teams were extending Marcus Howard all the way back to the half-court line, and they were playing that initial ball screen above the arc, standing at the top of the key, taking that away. And when you take Marcus Howard out of this offense, there isn't 1A, 1B, 1C that seems to, at least on a consistent basis, pick up the scoring that Howard gives you if he happens to be off.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think the problem is that there's just such a reliance on Howard that you're not quite sure how to respond when he's off. And plus, you got to remember, and again, this is not meant critically, but, you know, Howard's shooting percentage isn't spectacular. You know, how does he make those shots? Well, when he goes through a drive-thru, what does he do? Or drive-thru, sorry, drive spell. Sorry, Marcus, I know you're a healthy guy. When he goes through a drive spell, what do great players do? They keep shooting. You know, yeah. They keep shooting. They keep finding their way. And so you would expect that that group of players is like, okay, well, we're gonna work with Marcus. We're going to let him continue to shoot until it starts to flow again and our offense starts to flow normally. In those situations, there's no normal flow. And, yeah, who's the guy that's going to step up? Well, you got a group of players that aren't used to being the guy, the 1B or the 1C on a Marquette team. Where they came from, they're always one.
Yeah.
Okay, they were the guy. Now they have to rethink their place on this team and what their role is, and that's something completely different for these guys.
Well, it doesn't get any easier for the Golden Eagles as Villanova comes into town Saturday. So we could be looking at a Marquette team that starts the year 0-2, or we could be looking at a team that's 1-1, and the perception after what, as fans, we witnessed last night could completely change.
Yep.
And maybe some home cooking will be good with the Villanova Wildcats rolling into Fiserv Forum this Saturday. Time for us to take a break. On the other side of the break, the Badgers, winners of their last two non-conference games, getting ready for a Big Ten opener against Ohio State. And, oh, it could get ugly in a hurry. We'll talk about it next. It's the Journey House College Sports Show, powered by Waterstone Bank, right here on The Fan. It's the Journey House College Sports Show, powered by Waterstone Bank, right here on 1250 AM, 105.7 FM. The Fan, radio.com is where you can find all of the shows here on the station and nationwide. As we look up, as Daniel and I are here checking out the ABC flat panels, and Tennessee and Indiana are tied at 22 with 3:51 to go, and Indiana, who had a substantial lead, now could trail here as the extra point is pending. That game taking place this evening. This is one of those weird situations, Dan, where, you know, you almost figured, at least after the Rose Bowl or the Sugar Bowl last night, that the bowl games would kind of subside and then you'd wait for the national championship on Monday. But that's not the case now, as we're sitting here watching while we're working, the Gator Bowl going on in the background, and the extra point was good. So Tennessee now with a one-point lead over Indiana with, as we said, just over 3 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. But then I think tomorrow afternoon it's the Nevada Bowl. We got a couple of these. The Idaho State Potato Bowl has still got to be played. There's a couple of these little games that still have to pop up that you would think would probably be better off played prior to New Year's Day, but somebody is scheduling it for the optimal TV viewing,
right,
because ESPN has got to make their money, and so we continue on the old...
These are the afterthought bowls.
Yeah.
That's really what they are.
That's it right there. The afterthought bowls.
All right.
There we go. All right.
They'll love that.
Get your T-shirts now while you can. It'll sell out quick. All right, let's talk about the Badgers. The Badgers closing out the non-conference schedule with a win over Rider, a team that I think most people would have thought they would have handled easily, and they did, 65-37. Probably, though, the biggest surprise for Badger fans was the fact they went down to Tennessee, whom we're talking about right now in the midst of their game in the Gator Bowl on the football side, but the basketball team that had opened this year with a fairly impressive start, the Volunteers did, and the Badgers go into Tennessee and get a 20-point win, 68-48. The thing that drives me crazy sometimes about the national pundits, the color commentators, the guys who are making the big money, is when you hear great commentary like, well, if Wisconsin can keep hitting their shots the way they are today, this team could make a deep run. Any team, if they hit their shots consistently, is going to make a deep run. Thank you, Einstein, for that great in-depth commentary. But that's exactly what they did against Tennessee. They were shooting at a very high percentage, something that this team doesn't do on a consistent basis. And they got a really impressive win down against the Volunteers.
Yeah, this is a team moving forward into the season now, particularly the Big Ten season. Yeah, you are counting your wins in terms of RPI right away. It's an away game. It's yep. it's a better than average team. Do you walk out of there with a win? And this is something with a Badger team that already has five losses on the season. Yeah, this you're going to go back to this team or sorry, back to this game and hope that this is going to carry you onto the bubble and through the bubble and into the NCAA tournament. Look, we have said this. And, you know, if Wisconsin can hit their shots consistently. But, again, this team is all about the three-point shot.
Yes.
I'm sorry. We said this in game one. When they make the three-point shots, you know, here's this brilliant commentary again, they stand a good chance of winning the game. But, unfortunately, it's that simple. It really is. And so, you know, quite honestly, unexpectedly to me, they came in and finally started, you know, hitting their three-point shots. And guess what? It opened it up.
It does. You know? I mean, and this team just does not have the post play that they've had the last few years.
No.
And they're going to live and die from the perimeter. And so if they can be somewhat consistent, they'll keep themselves in games. Because you know defensively, this team is going to grind you down. They're going to wear you down. You're going to earn every single point. But the problem has been in those five losses, the ability to transition on the other side and hit off of the steal, hit off of the other team, maybe making that made shot when the shot clock got down to 2 or 3 seconds, whatever the case may be. They haven't always had the ability to answer, but they did have that ability against Tennessee. It was those transition points off of some really sound defense that helped build that lead and get them that 20-point victory.
Yeah, and so stop me if you've heard this before. Hey, it's been 7 minutes since Wisconsin's made a field goal. You know, some of those things, and sorry, those days are coming because that's been the Badgers for 20 years, right? They've had the question is even the best teams have had those, but they've been able to mitigate them. They've been able to break them up or shorten those time zones and do that. In my mind, Don, the guy that I'm always going to watch in terms of the success or the failure of the Badgers in the starting five is always going to be Trice. Always.
Thank you. That's exactly where I was going. Demetra Trice, this team will live and die this year on whether or not Trice is hitting his shot.
Yeah.
I don't care what anybody else is doing. If Trice is hitting his shot, this team seems to run at a different level.
Mm-hmm.
When he's off, the team is off.
Yeah, and what's funny is that when he's off, it's almost like he's lost. He's not quite sure what to do. It's kind of the difference between him and Marcus Howard. When Marcus Howard is off, what does he do? He keeps on shooting. When Trice is off, then he goes back and he reassesses, trying to figure out how else he can help his team. He'll try to distribute, but you can just see his game is off. It's not quite the same, and the team feeds off that. And so then you go down low to Reavers, and you know, Nate's he's having a fairly good season. It's not too bad, but he's not the guy that's going to carry this team.
And the difference in the illustration that you just gave, when you think about Trice hitting his shot, everybody else has this certain level of confidence that goes along with his confidence. So all of a sudden, Kobe King is shooting a little bit better, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Pritzel's shooting a little bit better. And when Trice is struggling, it almost seems like the other guys, that added burden of understanding they've got to hit their shots more consistently, plays into their head, and they end up shooting at a much lower percentage than they would have had Trice been hitting. It just seems, as you alluded to, this team's ebb and flow sits on his shoulders, whether it's right or wrong, and whether or not something could be changed as the season progresses, we're going to have to wait and see. But Trice is going to be the key factor.
Yeah, and I will say that since we've been, you know, the last few games, I've seen noticeably better bench play out of the Badgers, that they seem to be more consistent. It seems to me like people are finding the roles a little bit more. They know how they can help the team. They, you know, it doesn't feel like it's you start going deep into your bench and all of a sudden you just shut the team down, kind of a thing. So I have a minimal amount of hope that this team can find their way. And again, I'm going to go back to what we said a couple weeks ago. Longer than that, the team still had to find its way towards life. You know, after last year, you're always feeding the ball down low. You know you're going to get your shots underneath. You hope there's going to be no free throws involved. But you're kind of evolving past that now where it's not always going to the same set, same spot all the time. The idea of Great Guards offense has always been to distribute. And in my mind, this team is relearning how to distribute again. Where to go with it, who to go with it, how to create from that line. Last year, they didn't have to do that. So it's a little bit different this time around, and they're still trying to figure it out.
Talk about a gauntlet of a schedule. This team could be in a world of hurt, yep, and we could be talking about Greg Gard being on the hot seat in the not-too-distant future. So tomorrow it's at Ohio State, ranked number 5 right now in the country. Ohio State is a force. If you see Ohio State play, they're going to remind you, in my opinion, a lot of the Bucks. Tall, athletic, guys can shoot, they can play inside, outside, whatever the case may be. This team is complete when we're talking about the Buckeyes. Then you've got Illinois, then you're at Penn State, and Penn State, not necessarily known as one of the great basketball powerhouses in the country, sitting at number 21 right now. Then Maryland, then Michigan State, and it's not till the 21st of January that you play Nebraska, where if you just look at it on paper, you go, hey, you might get a win right there. I'm looking at the start to the Big Ten season where I would not be shocked for them to go 0-5.
Yeah, I was just going to say, remember that, you know, we lost to that team in New Jersey.
Right.
You know, it's just, we've already got our 0-1 record in that one. Look, Ohio State's going to make it to the Final Four, then keeping a tradition, they'll lose. This is, the Big Ten might be the best team in the best conference in college basketball right now.
Yeah.
And I got to look at, Penn State is number 21. Penn State,
yes,
is number 21. Okay. So there's a lot that's going to shake out. And again, there's still the opportunity. There's always those unexpected wins / losses that you don't see coming in the Big Ten because of the gauntlet of the schedule. Like when we talk about the WEAC, you know, it's these things are going to pop up. Do I think Ohio State is unbeatable? No, but you're right. They are good. You know,
yeah, I think they're really good.
And they have the opportunity to do some real damage. But then what's going to happen, Don? We're gonna get into the end of February, and guess who's going to pop up? Oh, yeah, Michigan State.
Yes, sir.
You know, they're going to get good. Michigan's floating out there somewhere. It's just, you know, it's a fun conference to watch, but you play in the Kohl Center, and you know what? Wisconsin's got a chance to win every game.
There is not necessarily one team within the Big Ten where you can look at and say, that's an automatic win.
Right.
Every team, for whatever reason this year, now early, we'll see how things play out as the season goes. Injuries come into play. Mm-hmm. Teams don't necessarily live mm-hmm. up to their potential or what they started the year doing. But when you look at Ohio State and Purdue and Minnesota, I hate to say it, but you know, mm-hmm. they could be right up there. Iowa, that the Big Ten this year is just filled with quality teams that are going to make life really, really interesting for the Wisconsin Badgers. We need to take a break. When we come back, we'll get to the D3 side of basketball as the WEAC and all the other conferences are up and running, especially now that the holiday break has ended and everybody's back at school and back in full swing as far as their conference play goes, and we'll talk about it next. This is the Journey House College Sports Show powered by Waterstone Bank right here on The Fan. Big Willie Styles already getting jiggy with it. Getting jiggy with it. We're back at it. It's the Journey House College Sports Show powered by Waterstone Bank right here on 1250 AM, 105.7 FM, The Fan. So we went into break, Dan, talking about how tough the Big Ten Conference was going to be in basketball. And on cue, a final pops up on the screen. Purdue beats Minnesota tonight in double overtime. That's just, I think, the kind of season we're going to get from the Big Ten, regardless of who's playing to, who's playing who.
Yeah, we forgot about Matt Painter and Purdue when we were talking about that, didn't we?
Right,
yeah.
And how these teams match up with one another. I think we're going to be seeing some overtime matchups, some very, very close finales, yep. I think, as the Big Ten
yep.
makes its way through. Let's get to some Division III talk here as we make our way towards the top of the hour. First of all, on the women's side, in the top 25 poll 4 weeks into the season, UW Lacrosse sits at number 11, up one, and Whitewater sitting at number 19 in the top 25. And on the men's side,
Platteville number 9.
Platteville at number 9, yeah. Undefeated, 9-0. Lacrosse also undefeated, 7-0. And in the midst of that, we're not even talking about Whitewater. That's off to a really impressive start.
Right.
Stevens Point, Oshkosh. I mean, it's funny that you've got two teams in Lacrosse and Platteville who, especially Lacrosse, over the last few years have kind of grown and ascended towards the upper half of the WEAC. But then you can't count out as the season goes forward a team like Oshkosh, a team like Whitewater, as Miller will have that team in Whitewater playing some exceptional basketball, and they already are. And before you know it, you could really see four, if not five, teams in the top 25 once things get up and running.
Yeah, and we can't forget that Carthage is sitting at number 18, too, on the women's side, doing a really good job at that. But, yeah, what's more impressive to me is there are a ton of teams, or it feels like there's a ton of teams from the WEAC just in the top 25, but then you go into the others receiving votes.
Yes.
And there are more teams up there just kind of waiting, fighting their way in. So, hey, Don, guess what? Now we're going to have the WEAC beating each other up.
Yeah.
Trying to get into the NCAA tournament. It's going to be another crazy year.
Yeah, and that's what ends up happening on the football side of things. Mm-hmm. Once that conference gets going, and they say, as you just alluded to, they start beating one another up, that's when you start to see the best rise.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the teams that are so hang towards the middle to, if not bottom. But then it's also why, as we have coaches on week after week after week talking about, they're battle tested once the tournament comes,
right.
Whether it's football or basketball. These teams that have spent the entire season beating one another up, once it gets into that one and done atmosphere, they don't have the fear because they've been battle tested.
Yeah, you can expect that. You know, on the men's side, on the women's side, we know that it's fun getting. You know, when is it good to be in February in Wisconsin? Never, except when it comes to WEAC basketball, because you see these teams jockeying and working for position to get into their tournament. For the effort to get in the NCAA tournament, it's always a great time to watch that. And guess what? We're still 4 weeks away from February, but
right.
You know it's going to be fun to watch. But I don't remember a time looking at the men's side and the women's side when I've seen so many WEAC teams listed. And we've talked about how good they are, but this year seems to be maybe they've amped it up to another level.
And we'll have to see once the conference play really gets rolling, how that will make life for those that vote even that much more interesting. A couple of games within the WEAC to keep an eye out for on Saturday. Whitewater is at Eau Claire. Eau Claire is one of those teams that's getting those honorable mention votes that you were just talking about. Lacrosse is at Oshkosh. Point at River Falls. And those matchups, the home team might flip, obviously, as you got to play one another twice, but you get that level of basketball all the time within the WEAC. And then we haven't even begun to start talking about teams like on the women's side at Wisconsin Lutheran.
Sure.
Clyde Knepel always has that team up and running, and for a small liberal arts college, they've got one of the finer
women's programs that you'll find anywhere in the country. And before you know it, we'll be talking about Wisconsin Lutheran making a run, not only within the conference, but at the national level as well. Concordia, on the men's side, playing really well early on. Going to have to see how they do within the NACC as that conference gets up and running. MSOE, a lot of talent on that team right now, and for whatever reason, it hasn't gelled the way I think anybody who follows MSOE thought it would be at this point. I keep waiting for that proverbial switch to turn on for MSOE, a team that I think went something like 14-4 last year and was upset in the conference tournament.
Right.
Hasn't found their groove yet, and I think that's a team that could be really scary when you've got a kid like Matthew Kermsey who can hit from anywhere on the floor once his shot starts falling. And talk about a kid, when his confidence is up there, look out, he'll drop 30 or 40 on you in a heartbeat. That's a team I think we could be talking about. So it's getting to that point in the season, Dan, where life is really getting exciting as we move away from football into basketball. We've got a lot of teams in the area who could really make a run outside of the big boys in Marquette, UWM, and Wisconsin.
Yeah, I think, you know, going through these and looking at the men's side just for a minute and looking at UW lacrosse. So lacrosse has always been floating out there really, really close, trying to break through. And it's fun to see lacrosse sitting there at 8-1 and number, let's see, number 11.
Right.
When we're used to seeing, you know, the Oshkoshes, we're used to seeing the Whitewaters. It's nice to see that, but that's the beauty of this whole division. Lacrosse is going to have to prove it by going to Oshkosh. Lacrosse is going to have to prove it by going to Whitewater. That's almost kind of the litmus test of the WEAC.
Lacrosse is at that stage, kind of like what we'd been talking about the last several years with the football program. They're there.
Right.
They're knocking on the door. They need that one or two marquee wins in order then to be considered as one of the upper echelon teams within the conference. Now, as somebody who went to lacrosse, the fact that we're having this conversation about them in basketball is miraculous, because it wasn't that long ago where basketball was essentially an afterthought.
Sure.
And my apologies to anybody who played for UWL back in the day, but UWL struggled. They were not a team that was feared within the WEAC, and over the last several years, they've grown into a team that is ready to knock on the door and make its way into that upper half.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You look at this now, and there are so many teams that are knocking on the door. Yeah, so many teams that have the ability, at least at this point in the season, they appear to have the ability to kind of bust through maybe. You know, it would not be the worst thing. With apologies to fans and alumni, UW Whitewater, UW Oshkosh, it would not be the worst thing to have a couple teams break through that you're not expecting. And for a long time now, we've kind of had at the end, it's been a two-team league. It would be fun now to have that three-team, that four-team fight to get those higher seeds in the conference tournament, to get that opportunity for the automatic bid into the NCAA. You know, no disrespect intended to those two programs, but, you know, to see a little bit more equivalency by the way of other teams picking up their program and getting to a higher level like the lacrosse or so on, Platteville again, just being able to do that would be a great opportunity to just even further kind of extol the power of the WEAC.
You know, the team, I think, that is going to be sneaky good, that it's hard to believe we're going to call them that considering what the reputation is, and that's Whitewater. I think Pat Miller has got a youthful team, so to speak, this year. I think he's got some underclassmen that are getting a lot of playing time, and they're still playing very well. And Pat Miller has had his team one of those perennial contenders that we were just talking about year after year after year. If that team is overlooked because of their youth, I think that's a team that could be really sneaky good, for lack of a better way of saying it, as we get into February, and a team that suddenly people are going to go, oh yeah, Here we go again. Here we go again. There's Whitewater once again.
Here comes the surge.
Right.
Right.
Sitting up there. And that, if you are a fan of the WEAC of another team, is going to be really scary because of the number of underclassmen that he has getting the number of minutes that they are. To think that if they're good this year, what are they going to be like for the next two or three?
Right. And again, I look at we've been talking about the WEAC for so long now, it's hard to have a conversation without Whitewater, without Oshkosh. And we've seen how other teams have pushed them but not always broken through. So yeah, I agree with you. I think Whitewater can be that team. You're right, it's crazy to say. That sneaky good team that people aren't looking for whatever reason. Now, I guarantee you there isn't a single coach in that conference that is looking past another coach in another program.
Oh, no. You know, I get it.
They have been there long enough where they know the moment they do that, they lose the game.
And
that's how tough the conference is.
And for somebody in our area, Equan Ards, who went to Milwaukee Hamilton, he's a junior up there at Whitewater, got a chance to see Whitewater take on MSOE. The kid's a human highlight reel. I mean, he is fun to watch. When he gets out into the open floor, hang on to your seat because the gym is going to shake when he throws it down. I mean, he's athletic. Out of that, you don't necessarily have positions anymore. Everybody's a hybrid, right?
Yeah, you're right.
It's a positionless type game now. You don't necessarily have, you know, a point guard, a shooting guard, a power forward, an off forward, a center. I mean, we've all fallen into the Giannis type thing where the guy 6'10 can bring the ball up the floor and run the floor for you, and you base your offense off of that. Ards is one of those kids who I guess back in the day we would think of as a forward, whether it's power or not. But I'm telling you, Daniel, when that kid gets into the open floor, he is a human highlight reel. And I'm sure if you go to Whitewater's website, you could probably find a few clips that would support what I'm saying right there. And the fact that he's from this area, coming out of MPS at Milwaukee Hamilton, you know, much success. And it's great to see kids coming out of MPS doing well at the next level.
Yeah, so moving forward on this, because he's not the only one, right? It seems like there's more equity in terms of guys that can do. And I grant you that he's at a very high level, but now it's not just limited to finding these guys at Whitewater.
Right, right, yeah.
So, I'm looking at and looking at what's out there right now, I'm still struggling to find out who I think as we get into deep WEAC play. Who's going to come out of this on top? If for years we'd be able to say with some relative certainty it would be one or the other, but it wasn't a guarantee because the conference is so good. Now I'm looking at this. I have no idea.
I don't think we're going to understand what the WEAC will be about until we get towards that last week of January. Once they've had an opportunity to kind of go through and play one another at least once before you get that home-and-home thing going as they make their way through the schedule, I think it's going to be a while, as you said, before we see who's really going to rise to the top within the conference. Time for us to take our last break of this Thursday night. And when we come back, it'll be the first Shovel the Funk of 2020.
So clean and pristine right now.
Yes, sir. And we'll do it all next. It's the Journey House College Sports Show powered by Waterstone Bank right here on The Fan.
You know what? I'm going to shovel the funk. I wanna shovel the funk. I wanna shovel the funk. I feel like shovel the funk. I gotta shovel the funk. You wanna shovel the funk? Do you wanna shovel the funk? Then go ahead. Go on.
Welcome back. It's the final segment here of the Journey House College Sports Show, powered by Waterstone Bank. As we get into the first Shovel the Funk of not only a new year, but a new decade. It's historic. It's an historic night here on The Fan, a day in which The Fan celebrates its 15th birthday. We kick it off by starting off with a nice, mellow, easy-flowing Shovel the Funk. Daniel, disrupt life. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, you know, look, it's very easy to go with Wisconsin, particularly Jonathan Taylor getting the 2,000 yards, but I'm not going to go there. Barry Alvarez won the internet yesterday. He won the internet. If you haven't seen it, go look it up. Grandson wanted to talk to Grandpa during the game, and Grandpa was having none of it.
Don't you want to know what Grandson wanted to say to, or was trying to say to him? I would love to have some sort of audio to understand what that little tyke wanted to get Grandpa's attention about.
Yeah.
And the reaction from Barry was nothing short of classic.
Yeah, he was excited to be sitting next to Grandpa. He didn't care about the football game, and Grandpa was all in for the football game. If you watched any of that game at all, they kept on going back to Barry Alvarez and having fun with his expressions. And there was Grandma. Oh, don't bother Grandpa right now.
Yeah.
Don't do that. So, yeah, it's for all the good things that happened, and, you know, it was a good thing for the Badgers, a good season for the Badgers, ended miserably, but I'm going to give it to Barry just because it brought some levity to the day.
Well done, well done. Sam, hand out a shovel, boss.
I was kind of hoping that Dan wouldn't say that about Jonathan Taylor because that's exactly where I was going to go. So I'm going to stick with it just to kind of get rid of all the, you know, bad vibes that came off of yesterday's loss and all that, you know. I only did this because I wanted to ask you guys, where does Taylor rank among you guys as far as top Wisconsin backs in Badgers history?
Wow, Jonathan Taylor to me is easily top five, if not top three. But the fumble issues, I think, are what keep him from being thought of as the number one back.
I gotta go. It's gonna sound like a homer, but hear me out on this one. I'm gonna go top three. Probably number three, Dane, for what he did. Alan Amici, obviously never saw him play, but the legendary aspect behind that. I put him in front of Gordon because of, I give you the fumble thing. Totally understand it. But what Jonathan Taylor could do that Melvin Gordon has not been able to do is come out of the back and come out of the backfield and catch the ball.
And
he's opened up the offense a little bit more.
But did that occur because of Chris? Like, see, I'm wondering if Melvin Gordon were given the same opportunity, which, you know, it's the what ifs, and that's what makes this fun. I just wonder if Melvin Gordon would not have evolved in the same fashion that Jonathan Taylor did, understanding that the way the offense was run, that wasn't even contemplated.
It would have been tough because he had Monte Ball in front of him, who also might be top five, in doing that. So James White was there getting carries as well. I mean, you think about that backfield.
Yeah.
That was incredible. So,
and think about what James White's doing now with New England.
Right.
I mean, that's Brady's go-to, out of the backfield, not necessarily the slot receiver anymore. It's dump it off right there.
Yep. So you, sir, what do you got?
I'm going to give mine, unfortunately, all in the same breath. I'm going to go to the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater to the Warhawks football program that took it on the chin in the national championship. But again, that's one of those situations where it does not diminish the success they had this year. And it just seems like what we were saying before, Dad, we keep getting to the door, right, Sam? You and Evan were hashing that out. We keep getting to the door. We just can't seem to walk through the door, and that happened again. That North Central team.
Oh, my goodness.
Holy cow.
Wow.
Did it not remind you of watching the Badgers in Ohio State?
Yeah.
Like, we, again, being Whitewater, the speed was just way too much for anything to happen in our favor as far as the Warhawks coming away with the championship. But congratulations to UW-Whitewater on what was nothing short of a spectacular season. You just came up a little bit short in that championship, but hopefully as time goes, that will ease a little bit of that wound, and you'll appreciate what you accomplished in that 2019 season. All right, Sam's telling me it is time to close up shop. Want to thank Sam for doing what he does on the other side of the desk. To the professor, as always, great start to the 2020 year. I'm Don Wachulis. We're back in 6-22. Enjoy the weekend. National championship Monday night, and we'll break it down next week. Have a great weekend. We'll see you later.